Hey everybody, it's Bevan and Biscuit Reynolds. We're here to welcome you to Bevan, a femme over 40 and her friends podcast. No, he doesn't want to be here anymore. I'm so excited you're here with us. Today I'm interviewing my friend Manda, and I want to give a content warning at the top, which I'm always a little funny about content warnings because, like, for me, I can get triggered by some random thing. It's not even necessarily like the deep stuff. I love having deep, real conversations with people, but we do talk about suicide. We talk about childhood sexual assault. So just be forewarned if those are things you don't want to listen to right now. Like, this is definitely a story of healing and triumph, but spoiler alert, Manda's great and she's really healed a lot. And like many healers, we go through traumatic events in our childhood so that we can heal from the wounds that we have healed, right? So anyway, just your heads up. My friend Manda is amazing. She's a dear sister friend of mine, someone I'm just so grateful for. And she really does exemplify, it's a scientific proven fact that you become the five people you spend the most time around and the books you read. And Manda made some big life decisions in 2019 when she was having her spiritual awakening about the people she was going to be around. And she is like, because that the science proves out within 2 to 5 years after, right? And now 4 years later, she is grounded and just so much herself. And I'm so grateful to get to witness her journey and to get to be her friend. And I'm grateful to get to share her with you. Before we get started at our podcast, I just want to tell you the best way to support this podcast is through my Patreon page. Patreon, Patreon.com, is a membership support site that allows folks like you to support creators like me who make work that you find value in. I do a lot for free on the internet. QueerFatFemme.com is my free blog, which has like 15 years of my relentless pursuit of my joy. And so funny, I've done so much work around like being okay that there's all these versions of me on the internet, and that is just part of my healing. I want you to go back in time and listen to earlier podcast episodes and hear how I've grown, hear how my friends have grown, because that is part of living a life. It's just continuing to grow and evolve and become a better version of you. To be cringe is to be free. And I just am willing to show you what it looks like to just start before you're ready and just be here and be honest and vulnerable continually. And so we have that. We have this podcast, which is freely available. And I really want this podcast to serve as a way for anybody to see all the different ways there are to be a happy, successful adult. There are so many ways. There's no one right what path. And unlike what we're taught, is to just grow up and go to school and get a lot of student debt and then live and somehow buy a house, right? Like, all of these things are just like things we think we're supposed to do. But in this episode, we really do talk about like releasing those ideas and just doing you so heavily that things truly align the way they're meant to. Patreon.com/FKDP is my Patreon page. You can also just, buy me a snack or do a little one-time thing if you don't want to support monthly. But there's a lot of great benefits to being a member. I'm an aerobics instructor. My class is called Fat Kid Dance Party. That's why it's Patreon.com/FKDP. And it's for anyone who feels left behind by mainstream fitness. So if you've ever been called too much, too fat, or felt too awkward to dance, mine is the supportive class for you. I work hard to make it truly all levels. So minimum participation is just showing up and cheering along. You've got that. But I've also had people who do Ironman triathlons who find my class challenging and fun. So we really hit all the levels. So I'd love to support you in that way. I also do a lot of my spiritual teaching behind the paywall on Patreon, just because it's a little more vulnerable for me to teach on that stuff. And so I put it there. And but also it's just a fun community. We have an online Discord community that's what I call my virtual locker room. So anyway, I'd love to invite you in. And I am so grateful that you're here. Remember, the most important things in life, the things that the robots and the billionaires are seeking from you, are your time, your attention, and your money. And so I'm really grateful for those of you who are choosing to spend your time and your attention here on the podcast. On with the show. Welcome to the podcast, Manda.
Hi, Bevan. Thanks for having me.
Yay. I'm so glad you're here. I like to start business in the front. So tell us what you offer in the world.
I offer a lot, actually. No,
You offer a lot.
I do. I am a Reiki practitioner, and I am also a bakery owner, cake decorator. So I started, I started with cakes first. I started making cakes for my daughter Jasmine's birthday in 2015. I just became really tired of grocery store and like big production cakes, like big box store production cakes. They lack flavor, they lack creativity, and so I thought to myself, I used to love baking as a child, and so I know that I could bake a cake, and I just felt like I could decorate one also. So I chose a theme that year. The theme was Hello Kitty. I bought a Wilton pan and the star tip to like do the, star tip Wilton decorating style. And I just did it. I made the cake, I made the icing, I put it all together. And after I was completed, I was like, wow, like this cake is really cute. Maybe this is something that I can like really get into, So as time went on, I would have people ask me to make cakes for their kids' parties, and I would also, continue to make cakes for my daughter. And eventually it turned into a business. I make probably at least 1 to 2 cakes per month for clients, and I also can make pies, cookies, I mean really anything that you can think of, I can create. So then, after realizing, I like making cake, I also started getting, I started having my spiritual awakening, actually. So I started getting into, crystals and spiritualism and a little bit of witchcraft. And I had been talking with some friends, and they said that they were going to go get certified as a Reiki practitioner. So I got really curious about Reiki. And I then decided that it would fit perfectly with my lifestyle, and I became a Reiki practitioner. It was a delightful weekend. We had a 2-day course, and it ended with the attunement, which was one of the most magical experiences I've ever had. Just all these women circling around us and putting symbols on our hands and over us and just saying prayers and blessings. It felt amazing. And so now I include Reiki into my baked goods and into my everyday lifestyle. But as I'm creating cake, I am infusing it with Reiki energy and just setting that intention for whoever the client is and whatever their case may be. Whatever comes to me intuitively that I need to add is what I add into the baked good. And yeah, I love it. I love it here. I'm so grateful to have mixed the two, because who would have ever thought that Reiki and cake would go together, right?
At my first Reiki level one class, I learned that in level two you can put Reiki into objects, and then it immediately occurred to me, I was like, oh, I have to put Reiki into tea. And so I did a Reiki tea business for a while, and I love that it went right to you, like, oh, I'm just going to add this to this practice I already have. And I want to say too, I've known you in months where you've had like 7, 8, 9, 10 cakes in a month. So, and on top of your day job. So, like, Amanda's a Gemini. She does a lot. Amanda,
Yes.
you're a big three, Gemini sun, Virgo moon, Aquarius rising.
Yes, that's right.
And I know Venus and Cancer. What's your Mars?
Mars in Gemini.
Mars and Gemini, yeah, keeping it interesting with how you make money. I have loved watching your businesses unfold. Also, you can hit Amanda up for card readings and Reiki worldwide. So,
Yes, absolutely. I would love to work with you.
yeah, and you're located in Indiana for anybody who wants local delivery for cakes. But you do ship, although you are having your nemesis, the USPS.
Yes. The last few times I have shipped via USPS, it has the cake, it just hasn't arrived on time. I had a shipped a cake to Texas. It didn't show up until a week after they needed it. And then most recently, I shipped some cupcakes to California, As I was flying out there to attend our friend Claire's party and provide the cupcakes. So I baked the cupcakes and shipped them ahead of time, and they didn't show up on time. So I had to rebake cupcakes on vacation in California. That's fine. I mean, that's great. I love baking cake in California.
Then you had the experience you were meant to have, and hopefully your insurance claim will go through. Yes. And you'll get paid back for that. Okay. So first I wanted to talk about how we became friends, because one of my favorite things about having a podcast with my friends is like the first episode with someone, I get the backstory of how you became who you are, and like also talking about like how friendship was born. And I think the way we became friends is like such a good reminder that like when you like somebody and you want to be friends with them, you just keep showing up and eventually you'll be friends if you're meant to be friends. Okay, so we met one fateful day in September of 2019. I was living in Los Angeles, you were living in Indiana, and we were in Massachusetts in the Berkshires at a Glowing Goddess Getaway retreat. And we were both working on staff, so we got to arrive the day before on a Thursday night. And I was sitting there with this bulldog named Arthur B. in a cabin.
Yes.
And I remember you came in with this group who had just driven in from Indiana, so it's kind of a long drive, and all squirrely, and everyone's all excited to see each other and smoking weed in a cabin. And I just remember you sitting on the couch with Arthur B.
Yes, that is true. I came in with a group of three other women from Indiana. It was a very long drive. I think altogether we spent like 17 hours traveling. We did stop at Niagara Falls halfway in the trip, so that was a nice little break, but yeah, that was a long trip. We were so happy to be there, and you're right, yeah, full of energy, squirrely, but also like tired, so tired. And I sat on the couch with Arthur B, and I heard Bevan say, "Are you as high as you want to be?" And I was like, "Absolutely not." Absolutely not. So you gave me a gummy, you passed gummies around, and we just chilled. Like, I think Mindy was in the room, Candace, Purple Courtney, I want to say,
Purple Sam Courtney for sure.
Was there, Morgan was in there. There were quite a few goddesses there, and at the time I had so much anxiety, but I knew that like I had really just loved the shit out of you like right off the bat, and I wanted to learn more about you and become friends with you. And and so like I watched you that whole weekend just like live out loud as your most authentic self, and give people dream dabs and Fat Kid Dance Party. I was working during Fat Kid Dance Party, but watching it was like such a vibe, right? You did the Cupid Shuffle, and I was like, oh wow, like that song goes on forever. But a few ladies stuck it out to the end. And it was just really fun to watch. So so after our getaway experience together, I started following you on Instagram, and like we started messaging each other, you know, in the DMs and getting to know each other. You asked me to come to a Zoom call so you could like get to know me better. And our friendship has just evolved so much since then. Like it's been what, 4 years
since
we met?
Yeah.
And so many things have happened in our community and personally, you know, in our lives. And I'm really grateful to be in community and be friends with you, Bevan. You've really helped level up me, like my spiritual awakening. You were there like almost as like an usher into like the things that I can do to help me process the things that I needed to process. And you bring so much joy and fun and laughter into my life. I'm just forever grateful for you and for our friendship.
Oh, same here. I feel like you're just so thoughtful and so warm and caring and fun. Like it really is like such a gift when you find people you can be your true self around. For me in community, like in spaces like the Glowing Goddess Getaway where I already felt comfortable, like I could totally be myself 100%, like lean into full on whimsy, right? Like all the things that just you know, when I'm loud and I'm excited, like that's me at my highest vibration. And I love spaces where I get to be that way. And it's interesting because like there's community spaces where that feels really available for me. And then there's like friendships where that feels available. And like when you like hit a friendship where like, because I could spend 5 minutes with anybody, you know, I can make a good connection with anybody. But like how people act and who they are determines how much time I'm willing to spend with them. Because like I'm here to really do me. And I'm not here to like be judged or like be with people who are like trying to bring the vibe down, right? So if it's other people who are willing to like be in that vibe and to just have a good time, and like, you know, it's a weed retreat, so of course I'm saying, are you as high as you want to be, right? Like, and that, and it's just always a good thing to remind people that you don't have to be that high either, because sometimes when there's so much weed being passed, like my first couple getaways, like I got too high
yes
and like had to go lay down, you know what I mean, which is nice that your bed is really nearby. But, and like, it's so funny on at a getaway, like the first night, because there's edibles, right? Usually at a getaway. And on the first night, people are in bed at 9 p.m. because they are too high. You know what I mean? And it's, so it's just a reminder to modulate. Like, you don't have to take all the puff puff passes that are passed your way. You know, like you can just be as high as you want to be. And that's totally fine. Like, and there's people who come to our retreats who don't even use THC recreationally. Like they're just CBD users, or they just want to be around women who care about spirituality and wellness. And like our programming is pretty dope, if I do say so myself.
Absolutely. Even without the cannabis, all the magic that we bring, you know, individually and then together as a group, makes the retreats worthwhile. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to get high. I mean, getting high is a huge bonus, you know, because it's fun. We're bringing in fun. We're bringing in, I know for myself, it helps with anxiety. It helps with pain management. But you're right. There's a fine line between like just having fun and then you're too high and you have to go lay down in your tent or in your bed.
Which is not as fun. So it's like trying to like just be high for the fun and then like release it, or like not be high at all, right? And just enjoy.
Yes.
What you need. For me, I've talked a lot on this podcast about what I use cannabis for medicinally, but definitely it's pain relief. It's antidepressive. So it really helps me like get into my vibe. My brain is very busy. I'm an ADHD cutie, and like it is so, and I can really drive myself too hard sometimes. And so it's like, it's that like the 420 time of day, like, do I need to keep driving myself or do I need to turn my brain off? And like, it just enables me to kind of switch into a more mellow gear. And I'm really into these days terpenes, and just focusing on like, what are the terpenes in the medicine? Because one of the coolest parts about cannabis legalization is that we have more information about the medicine we're getting. It's not just like whatever the dealer has. It's like, what do I need for the medicine in my body? And shout out to states like Oregon, who still let you sniff the cannabis before you smoke it, because like your nose knows what you need, and like it'll tell you what you need, and what your nose is smelling is the terpenes in there. And so anyway, I'm so grateful for the medicine. And it's interesting too, because this year I have made some real big choices about like, I'm not gonna get high with people I don't trust. Because really, when I am using cannabis, I am my fully authentic self. Like there's no dimmer switch on a high Bevan, you know, like, so,
yes.
And you know, not everyone can handle me at my like 100% enthusiasm. And that's all right. Those aren't my people. But you are my people, Amanda. And I'm glad and grateful that you rolled into the DMs and we created our friendship. And you really are like, community means you keep showing up, and you really are the definition of community. You do keep.
Oh, thank you. I love you, Bevan.
Oh, I love you too. Okay. I want to talk about your spiritual awakening. But first, before we get to spiritual awakening, let's talk about like your early life. Cause you've really lived some life and experienced, as many healers do, you've experienced a lot of trauma and a lot of grief and loss. And so I'd love to hear your story and how you got to your spiritual awakening.
Okay. It started off, I mean, just like my mom was a young mother. When she had me, she was 18 and she already had a child. She had my brother PJ first. She was 16 when she had him. She had me at 18 years old, and then she had a set of twins, my younger sisters, at the age, she was 20. when she had my sisters. So
I think it's important to note for anyone out there astrological that your mom is an Aries and that those twin little sisters of yours are also Aries. So you're sandwiched between Aries with like your Virgo brother with a Cancer moon to like cling to.
Mm-hmm.
In the midst of all this Aries energy. Okay.
Yes, absolutely. And my parents split up when shortly after my sisters were born. So it was a single parent household. She's trying to get by with all these kids, you know, and she's also trying to live her life. So when I was 4 years old, I was sexually assaulted by my brother's dad. And that just led to years of abuse from him. Probably I would say until I was at least 10 years old. This happened whenever we would go, like I would want to be with my brother at his dad's house, and you know, he would get drunk and then middle of the night he's like assaulting me. So that was really confusing and I was afraid of him. So I did not like share that with anyone because I was worried about the repercussions. So it was just something I kind of carried within me. And I later found out that my brother was also being abused by his dad in the same manner. So yeah, it was him and I like clinging to each other for safety, you know, a lot of times. So, we got through that, you know, and there came a point where like, I didn't have to be around him anymore. But then we started going into like all of these deaths in our family. The first traumatic death I can remember was my cousin, Chris. He was 16 years old. He was in a car with all of his friends. There were like six people in the car, I want to say, and their car was hit by a Greyhound bus. It was like a head-on collision, and he passed, you know. And then a couple years later, you know, my grandma died from cancer. A few years after that, Chris's brother, Ralph, committed suicide. And there have just been like a lot of just traumatic deaths in the family since then. And then in 2005, my brother decided to commit suicide as well. And obviously like it's really bad when you lose a sibling, but like the worst part about that for me was that like I was the last person to speak to him before he passed.
Right, like you were there.
Well, I was there. I walked out into the backyard. He was sitting in a chair, and he's like, "What are you doing?" And I was like, "Oh, I'm getting out of here. I'm about to go over to my friend's house and hang out for a while." And he's like, "Yeah, I'm about to get out of here too." And I'm like, "Okay, cool. Like, where are you going?" And he's like, "Well, I mean it in a different way. I'm about to like leave this earth forever." And I'm like, you know, I stopped dead in my tracks and I'm like, "What's going on here?" Essentially, he said that he felt like no one loved him. And that he would be better off dead. And I begged and pleaded for him to not do that, and told him that I loved him. But he, you know, he told me that if I did not put my daughter in the house, he was going to do this in front of her and I both. So I said, okay. I put Jasmine into the house and kind of put my head in to grab my sister's boyfriend, and the gun went off. I knew what happened. I sent my sister's boyfriend, James, out into the yard to like take care of my brother while I called 911, and he didn't make it. He didn't survive that. So for me, there was a lot of guilt around that, even though like I did everything that I could, like there was always just replaying this. It was trauma. I suffered from PTSD. There was just so many times that I would go over the situation in my head and think like, what if I would have done this or that differently? But, you know, eventually I had to tell myself that, like, I did nothing wrong. You know, that was his choice, his decision. It happened. And I just have to kind of be okay with it, you know, as hard as it is to be okay with it, like, you just kind of get to that point where you have to. So I didn't get, you know, I wasn't okay with it for a long while. I carried that grief around like a backpack, like, and it was just a part of who I was. It was sometimes like how I introduced myself to people, like, "Hi, I'm Amanda and I have all this trauma," you know? And so then there's, of course, cycles of addiction with that. It starts with like drinking alcohol and moves into like a little cocaine, and then like you're a full-blown addict before you know it. And at times I was addicted to pharmaceuticals and heroin even, just to try to check out of like what was going on in my life, you know.
So you're trying to distract yourself from pain by chasing a high. Was there ever anything that was like off limits for you? Like, I know some people will say like, I'm never going to do heroin, right? Like Matthew Perry talks about this in his book. Like, he's like, that was his line. And I'm like, I'm so confused still, like why all the other things and not heroin, right? Like, and so like, what was it? Did you have any lines there? And like, what influenced which drugs you picked?
So I didn't really have lines on like the drug. My boundary was like, I didn't want to ever be the person who was shooting up drugs. Like, for me, it was like, if I pick up a needle, I'm going too far. I would say the influence of the drugs are typical. I mean, it's friends and family members who were in, you know, using the drugs, and I'm like, oh, what is that? You know, it was my curiosity that just led me down those roads, in an effort to escape my reality and like the thoughts that are cycling with the post-traumatic stress disorder, and everything that, you know, had happened in my life up until then. So it came to a point in 2010 that I was on drugs. I felt really hopeless. And I tried to commit suicide. It was shortly after, like, I had lost a baby. I was pregnant and had an ectopic pregnancy, lost the baby. And then like, things just really, like, things were kind of rocky, but then they just really went downhill from that point. So in August of 2010, I was up all night the night before on a binger doing cocaine and heroin, luckily to have even survived that. There was family conflict the next morning, and I decided to take all the medications that I was being prescribed. So at the time, I was being prescribed Xanax and Klonopin by my doctor for post-traumatic stress disorder and anxiety, and antidepressants and pain medication, because in 2010, you could get Vicodin for anything. So my doctor was giving me all this pain medication and anti-anxiety medication. I took every bit of the medication that I had on hand. And I had made a post on Facebook. So James, my sister's boyfriend that had helped me with my brother, he saw my post on Facebook and sent an ambulance to where I was at. He knew where I was at.
Is this my friend, James, who is the son of a James or the dad of a James?
Yes, but not the same ones that were in church. Like, this is, it's different. And that's weird. I didn't even think about those two Jameses. But yes, James has a father in spirit named James, and his best friend is my cousin James, who also has a father in spirit named James.
Wow. We got, so just to give more context to this, Amanda is the person who got me to start going to a spiritualist church on Zoom every Sunday morning. And so part of those services, we have there's a very beautiful meditation, and then a sermon. It's about 10, 15 minutes long, usually about like love and being kind. Spiritualism is a denomination, but it's very like, you know, Jesus plus, you know, my favorite kind of way to worship, and like the loving Jesus, not the judging Jesus that other people try to purport as Jesus, which is not Jesus in my opinion. And then there's two mediums who do messages from loved ones. And so if you go to church with someone every Sunday for a year or more, you really get to know they're dead people.
Yes. It's so funny. In church, you'll see, you know, a lot of people will say, oh, your mom's here again, you know, because they're just so used to their dead people showing up that they know who they are immediately. That's funny. But no, that's a different James. That's so funny you brought that up. So yeah, James sent an ambulance to where I was at. And then my friend Doria saw the Facebook post and called me. And she's like, what's going on? And I'm telling her. And then she's like, hey, where are you at? I'm going to come over. Like she like tricked me, and I gave her the address, and she also called the ambulance to come and pick me up. So the paramedics arrive, I get in the ambulance, and then I don't remember much except for they were telling me to like stay awake, and I was like, absolutely not. Like that is not why I did this. I'm not staying awake.
You're like, if anything, I just wanted to sleep.
Yeah. And then I woke up in the hospital. You know, and it's so weird because they were like, they told me that I didn't take enough of anything to overdose. And I was like, wow, like you're saying 30 plus Xanax, 30 plus Klonopins, and 30 plus painkillers at the same time were not enough to overdose. Looking back on that now, I'm like, okay, because I'm protected. And like God and my angels were like, no, you don't get to do this. You don't get to check out. Right. But I had to spend some time in the hospital after that, at least like 72 hours, I want to say. And I slowly but surely started getting myself together after that. I was still going through a lot of BS because I was unhealed and just trying to like navigate the world as sober as I could get or be, you know, and still have all this trauma in the background. And in 2019, I went to the Glowing Goddess Getaway, and that's where I met you, Bevan. But that's also where I had my spiritual awakening. This happened, it was so weird. So Deidre was giving her speech to the volunteers about why she started the Glowing Goddess Getaway. And as she's giving the speech, I'm having like flashbacks in my mind of an acid trip that I had had the year prior. And like everything that she's saying is like lining up with this acid trip, right? It's like click, everything's coming together like a puzzle piece. And I'm just like mind blown, right? So I was also having some like physical ailment, health issues during that time. I had like a blockage in my intestines, and I went to lay down in my tent because I was in a lot of pain. And while I was asleep, I was like in and out of sleep, but I was having these visions of my grandma, my mom's mom, and her mom. Like I'm envisioning them, a photo of the two of them. Like I see this photo of the two of them, and they're telling me, you're a witch. You come from a long line of witches. You are powerful. You are here to help change people's lives, and you need to like rise up and do this work. You're not this, all of these things did not happen to you so that you could lie down and just die. You know, you were sent all of these challenges in your life so that you can rise up and help other people. And I was just like mind blown. I'm like, what is happening right now? This is like the first time that like mediumship happened for me in such like a strong way. And I just did not know what to do. I just didn't know what to do with it. So that Saturday, I was just like really confused and like, like, what is happening? Or no, that was Friday. It was the Friday of the retreat. I'm just kind of like, what is happening? It felt very profound, but I just didn't know what was unfolding. So the Saturday of the retreat, it was like a rainy day. The whole day it was like rainy. It was just like a slow, steady, not like a downpour at any time, just like this rain, this light rain. And I was having a really rough day with the woman who was in charge of the catering and the food service part of the GGG. And
was it Kitchen Dragon?
Yes.
That's my nickname for her that I got from my friend Rachel, who witnessed her acting like this, but I never had to work for the kitchen, so I didn't have to experience directly. I will say this, as the two of us are actually, I was the facilitator most recently, and now you are facilitator of the Glowing Goddess Sisterhood. We will not hire a kitchen dragon again.
Absolutely not. I will run the kitchen myself if I need to, with kindness. So I'm having challenges with her. And the day's like rainy and it's kind of like sucking, right? It's like, what is going on here? Like, but there were glimmers. Some of the glimmers that were like, okay, I had a realization that I was a part of a coven. And I don't know if that was like, you know, I'm getting mediumship messages from my ancestors or what was happening, but I had a thought like, these are witches. This is a coven. You're going to be a part of this coven. Bevan's a witch. And it was just like my mind was like pointing out different people as I'm working. I'm like looking around, you know, and my mind is just like, she's a witch, she's a witch, she's a witch. Like, this is very important. It's okay. Like, just keep, you know, keep moving forward. And I'm good at that. I'm good at like overcoming and persevering. So like, I'm just going to keep moving forward, right? By the end of the night, I didn't really feel bad anymore. I was exhausted. I had worked all day long because I had missed Friday due to my like sickness. So I worked all day long with her on Saturday, and I felt like by the end of the night, I was like, you know, I don't have any hard feelings towards you because I kind of get it. You know, you're the person who has to make sure all these things are done, and you're just trying to do that. And it was kind of like me like not trying to like hold any resentment towards that woman and just like, okay, it's fine. I understand. I get it. It's cool. And then I went to bed. I woke up that Sunday. And so that Sunday was my brother PJ's birthday. It was September 15th. And typically on that day, I would be really sad. Like, I would just be crying all day, depressed. I miss my brother. But he like told me, like, don't be sad. Like, don't be sad. Let's celebrate my birthday. Let's be grateful that we got to be friends so early in life and like we had each other, and like just know that I'm here with you, you know? And so that's the kind of the intention I set for the day. And Sunday was a beautiful day. The sun was shining. It was like all the rain and the clouds had like cleared out, and now like it's a brand new day. The sun's shining. It was just very symbolic and profound for me. And then, you know, we wrapped up the GGG and went back home. And when I got home, I'm like telling people that I love, you know, my life is about to change. This weekend was very amazing. I don't know how exactly it's going to happen. All I know is that I'm going to lean into myself and like what's best for me. And if that means like I'm homeless and I'm just figuring it out, then that's what I'm going to do. And that's what I did. I started my journey, and Mac, I'm grateful. It's the best decision I've ever made. I could have went back home and gone back to like, let's just focus on the hustle and let's focus on a 40-hour a week job and try to, you know, build our life back up. And because I was going through some stuff then too. But instead I was like, no, I'm actually going to do the opposite. I'm just going to focus on what feels good and what's best for me and see where this takes me. And so here I am. I'm so grateful to be here.
Okay, so it part of, I mean, just witnessing your journey and how willingly you have stepped into flow, and a lot of times flow state in a spiritual journey and spiritual alignment feels like a jolly free fall, because spirit doesn't understand security and safety the way we've been taught in our colonized existences, right? Like, we're taught like a job equals security, when I think anybody who's ever been laid off or fired knows that you are an at-will employee and that at any moment they can change their mind about you. There's like, we assume we have housing stability and safety, when in fact, like, I think as we're witnessing more climate chaos, like, there could be a flood through your town and suddenly your house is gone, and that, or a wildfire. Like, that, those are very real things that are happening to people all around the world right now. So, like, nothing is actually secure. And so once we like release that and we can just step into flow state and understand that like your housing will be handled, your food will be handled. It may not be the way you wanted it to happen frequently. It's not the way you want it to happen. But it just, like Drea says, this is like spirituality feels like a jolly free fall, spiritual alignment. And like, so it's like exciting and fun and terrifying, like, because you're just flying through like Alice in Wonderland, and especially in the early parts of the spiritual journey, because you have to release so much that isn't really you, that you did when you were masking and people pleasing and like living a life for other people, to then like be you. And I love part of this journey too of your like jolly free fall is like your daughter was 18, so you were able to just decide, okay, I'm responsible for me, and that's what I can do right now. I can't even be responsible for Jasmine. And so part of that, so like, you were technically homeless, right? Like couch surfing basically for how
Yes.
long?
For almost a year.
Wow.
Almost a year. And then went back into that kind of us. So I moved. to Chesterfield, Indiana with my friend Janae. It was during COVID, and she did not trust to let her daughter Veda go to a daycare or out of the home for babysitting. So she really needed someone to come and stay with her and babysit. And I'm like, Janae, I can't drive to an hour away, you know, each day to babysit. And she said, well, I have a room. You can just come live here and we'll figure out the logistics. And I'm like, okay, cool. So that's what I did. I'm like, okay, this is the next step, right? You know, because I don't know, I just kept seeing like Janae post how on Facebook, how she like needed this babysitter, and it happened for like 2 weeks. So I was like, maybe I should follow this nudge, right? And so I moved in with her in Chesterfield, where I'm at now. And that gave me time. Of course, like I had to help her with her daughter on certain days that we agreed to, but it gave me so much time to rest, to just, okay, I'm okay. I'm financially secure. I have this, you know, a little bit of foundation here. Janae doesn't expect much from me. I just have to watch this kid during her work hours, you know. I can truly just like focus on me and rest. And so that's what I did. For a year, I stayed here with Janae. I watched Veda. I rested a lot. I was able to take like my first road trip far away to Colorado. I drove myself there and like from the bottom of Colorado to the top of Colorado and then back down and back to Indiana, which was very liberating for me. And then, you know, it came to a point where I was like, okay, maybe being someone's nanny isn't for me. And so at that point I told Janae, you know, I can't do this anymore. And I moved out. I moved back to Indianapolis. And while I wasn't like couch surfing, I had a room at my aunt's and then I had a room at my daughter's, and each of those lasted about 5 months or so each place, you know, about 5 months at my aunt's and about 5 months, not even 5 months at Jasmine's, I would say 3 months. And then, I was talking to Janae again, and she had said that she moved out of this trailer and, she had bought a house, and, there was someone who was supposed to buy the trailer maybe, but she didn't know if it was still going to work out. And so when she told me that, I kind of like my guides were telling me, you need to talk to her about the trailer, like have a talk with her about the trailer. And, you know, there's fear. So I was like going back and forth with myself on, you know, what if she says no? And what if this, and you know, all the what ifs. And finally I just talked to her about it. It was just like, you know, no pressure, but if he doesn't want it, you know, I would be interested. I just can't pay you the full amount immediately. It has to be, we have to work something out. And she's like, oh really? That's perfect. And so like she checked with him, he no longer needed the trailer, and I was able to move in March of 2022. And that was so great for me. Like I just, man, after all the time of, you know, different circumstances and couch surfing and all that, like to have a place that's mine, just felt really good. And I was able to even do, you know, even more resting and even more finding myself and even more like connecting with Camp Chesterfield, because Camp Chesterfield is 4 minutes from here. And for anyone who doesn't know what Camp Chesterfield, we were talking about church. Camp Chesterfield is the headquarters of the Indiana Association of Spiritualists. It's been there since like 1890. The land was acquired during the spiritualist movement in America, and they have maintained that property since then. There are mediums who live on the grounds in their little cottages, and they have a church, and they have a spiritualist college where you can become certified as a medium. You can become a certified healer. You can become a reverend of spiritualism. And so I've just been grateful to be so close to those grounds, because those grounds are really healing for me. Just to go in the spring and the summer and lay on the ground there and watch nature and watch the little black squirrels and the birds and the trees is just so, so healing. So I'm just grateful to be here and grateful to have that, not only the grounds, but I've also been becoming more involved in the community there. and church and all of that, because I never even had any religious like upbringing. There was no religious foundation in the home. So I was kind of against religion. I didn't really know what to do with it or where to go. And to have that now is just so grounding for me. Like, it keeps me in line, I think, you know, and keeps me from like I know like the light is so much better than like the negative aspects and the shadow aspects of life, that I just want to stay in the light and see what other good things it's going to bring into my life, you know?
Yes. Some things I want to pull out from this is like, I've loved witnessing your journey, just because I love someone on a growth path, and like, you've just become more yourself and more grounded and strong, you know, and like really not strong in a dominating way, but strong in a centered and grounded way, which is, I think, really like, I like the term woman of strength. And I'm going to steal it away from, it's like, it's very popular in the Christian communities. And that's not how I mean it. I just mean like this grounded strength where you don't need to control everything in order to feel strong. You're just there and you're a rock. And like, I think in many ways, like that's watching you like really lean into that Virgo moon of yours and that stability that's available there. And also, even just when you first moved up to Chesterfield, and you were just taking your walks, you're like, there's this land nearby. And I, you know, you would just take walks by the river. And I just watched you soothe yourself. And I really want people to hear how much rest was involved in your spiritual awakening, and how much releasing like hustle and toil can give you space to rest, and like creating more options for yourself. Like some people, a lot of people I know on their spiritual journeys release having a house, you know, like you put your stuff in storage, whatever you really need. And then you're just there and you're figuring out, you know, every day there's daily bread, but you just kind of got to figure it out and like, and what's available. And I so, you know, someone who has big rich lesbian dreams, like I just really want to create sanctuaries for people and animals to like heal, you know, where your rent is not expensive and you can work a little and then like rest and really focus on the healing process that brings out, I think, the desire and the things that people can do and want to do and wants to birth through you. Because when you're so focused on like the grind, and some of us like the grind, like we feel like we need all this stuff, you know? Like, I remember when I was a lawyer making the highest I've ever made is 80 grand a year. And when I was making that much, I was spending like at least $100 a month on Lush and Sephora just to make my life feel livable. You know what I mean? And like, I didn't have time to really nourish myself. So I was eating a lot of takeout. You know what I mean? Just like ways that our money goes that forces us to toil. And if you can release the toil and have more time to feed yourself, then you don't need to spend that much money on feeding yourself. It's like a snake eating its tail in many ways. And like, I think defeating capitalism a lot of times is just dropping out, you know, like you don't have to do that. And like, you even, okay, so watching you like just walking around Camp Chesterfield, and then when you move back up there, you really like were like, no, I really want to do this. Like, I'm going to get involved in the community and introduce myself to people. And like, I see that fruiting in your life now. People know you. They know you as the Reiki cake lady, because like, you go, there's two, if you ever want to visit Camp Chesterfield, there's Mayfest. What weekend is that? Second weekend of May?
It's the third weekend in May, I believe.
Mayfest. And then
the 18th and 19th this year.
Okay. And then there's Spirit Fest, which is in September.
Yes. The third weekend in September. Yes.
Third weekend in September. And then there's also like mediumship development weeks for like 1 week twice a year, right?
So there are week long sessions. They have a few of them throughout the year, but there are two major ones, one in April and one in October. And those are where they also will have the consecration ceremonies for people who are being ordained, or they've completed their, all of their classes to become either like a spiritual seeker, mediumship, assistant reverend, or assistant minister, reverend. And so those are the weekends where they have many classes throughout those weeks, and they're Monday through Friday courses. So you'd go every day for the hour long class. And then at the, you know, on Friday, they either have a test or they just kind of give you, mainly they give you a study guide to help you when you do your exam for the certification. And so you take all these classes and then you get your certification at the end.
Yeah. I want to say, like, what are the chances you end up next door to Camp Chesterfield? But no, the chances are 100% because you followed your spiritual path and you were being led to this spiritual community. And so here you are, like 4 minutes away, able to like really have that strong bedrock. Cause like when you were talking about like your experience with drug use, like it's the people you surround yourself with, right? Like a lot of the reasons why I didn't end up on a heavy drug path is because I wasn't like around people who did drugs. It's like, or I was around people who did drugs who wouldn't let me do drugs. I didn't, my first real experience with being around hard drugs was law school. So much drug use in law school, a really intense amount of drug use in law school, actually. And like, and so that's where most of my experimenting happened. But I always had people who were like, no. And like for me, like my spirit, like this is long before I, like you, I did not grow up with religion. And I'll say of all the traumas I had, I'm grateful I didn't have religious trauma. Because when I came into my spiritual awakening at 31 years old, it was like, poof, here I am with God. And I don't have all this like baggage around who God has to be. Once I realized, oh, God can be for everyone. You don't have to have religion to have God. It's just so liberating. But I remember like this had to have been like an angel voice or God or something. But like, I heard strongly, like this, probably the second time I ever did cocaine, this is not for you. Like I felt so good. Like it was just a false confidence that I felt when I was using that drug. It's so funny to think about doing cocaine and heroin at the same time. Cause I'm like downer upper, you know what I mean? Like, and I like things like I like a sativa. I like things that like brighten me up and lift my mood. And just like I'm doing cocaine and I just knew I was like, oh, I feel so confident. This is like probably the meanest, most egotistical version of myself coming out with this drug. I'm like, this is not for me. This is not my yum. Like, I think this is not a good idea. And so it was like, it was just that awareness. And somehow I had the willpower, which like willpower has always been an interesting tangle in my life. And it's like, you know, I have willpower for the important shit. You know what I mean? Like, I'm big into harm reduction. I'm big into like people figuring out, like, God, I am so grateful for cannabis being legalized so that people have pain relief available to them that isn't a narcotic that's addictive, you know? And like, you can't overdose on weed. And like, and it, interesting too, when you were talking about your overdose experience. And I also want to point out, like, as soon as you started talking about your trauma, like, we got a lens flare from the goddess, like, on your camera. So like some rainbows surrounding you the whole time. For those of you who aren't watching our video, like that's what was happening. It's really cute. But like I was in reading Matthew Perry's autobiography. He was talking about like taking 55 oxy in order to feel high. And I was like, that's a lot. Like I would think that's an overdose amount, but it's not. Like if you're chasing the high, like I guess you can handle it. So like, wow. So I'm really, really grateful that you stayed alive. And for all of the decisions you've made, even if it took, you know, however long to get to your spiritual awakening, because like watching you in the last 4 years just become so grounded and happy and like peaceful, like that is stuff that you can't take a pill to do that. You actually have to do the work.
Yeah, I don't take any medications for depression, PTSD, anxiety, or pain anymore. I might take a Tylenol or an Excedrin. Yeah. And I use cannabis and that, or I use plant medicine because I also use mushrooms to help when I'm feeling anxious or depressed. It kind of helps give me a reset.
Yeah. Such good reset medicine. What is your experience with microdosing and how has that helped you in your journey?
My first experience with microdosing was shortly after the Glowing Goddess getaway in 2019. I was coming off of my depression and anxiety medications at that time. I decided to quit them cold turkey a week before the getaway.
Whoa.
And so I was kind of feeling I was feeling the anxiety and the depression come back. And so I wanted to try something that was different, where I wouldn't have to go back on the cycle of getting back on medication, because there's just so much that your body goes through coming off of it and going on those medications that I just did not want to feel. So I would just take a little piece of a mushroom and put it in my tea in the morning, and then just kind of sip it over the next hour or so. And I didn't get high off of it, but you get little glimmers when you microdose mushrooms. You know, you might see a brighter color, or a sound may sound better than what it did before. but I was noticing like it was enhancing my mood for sure. I was feeling more uplifted and more optimistic about my situation and knowing that like as long as I keep working hard and like taking care of myself, then like everything's going to work out for me. And so now like I don't really do mushrooms often, but I am a part of cohorts sometimes, and we'll like Andrea's cohort, and we'll do the microdosing and then do the journal work and do the conversations, right? So yeah, like I'm grateful that I don't have to reach for an opiate or, you know, a Xanax or a Klonopin to calm myself down. And I see people that are still stuck in that cycle, and I understand feeling like they need that medication, and some people do, but for me it was time to be off of it so I can truly like know who I am without all of that extra medication and without like, you know, a lot of times the anxiety would be stronger while I was prescribed anxiety medication, because there's always like, is the doctor going to refill my prescription? Is the pharmacy going to have the medicine? Am I, you know what I mean? Like just all these things that play along with being on those medications. So yeah, plant medicine for the win. The only medications I take now are for like health issues, like physical health issues or like allergy problems, you know?
I mean, I'm not someone who is anti prescription drugs on the whole. I'm just really, and I want to make that clear because some people have talked shit about me on the internet and I don't pay attention to it, but I want people to understand I am grateful that antidepressants exist because I'm grateful for my friends who are still alive because of their antidepressants. But, and I'm someone who has been prescribed Klonopin because I needed it. Like this is before I was in a legal weed state, and like, I needed something that could like, cause my partner was going through cancer treatment, and like on my off days, like when I would take a break and go do yoga, I would end up extraordinarily anxious, like cripplingly anxious, almost panic attack anxious. And like a friend of mine turned me on to Klonopin. She's like, this can really help you. And like it did. And so I had it, right? And but like I think that these things are like bridges to you doing your healing, you know what I mean? It's like there's still, you know, work to be done, and you know, therapy and trauma recovery and like lifestyle changes that need to happen in order to release that stuff. And if you need to be on it your whole life, I don't have any judgment for what anybody makes choices around, absolutely no judgment. But it's exciting to hear about people like you who have been able to figure out different lifestyle and different mindset and do the healing work. Cause it is really, it's, I think a lot of times we're afraid to do the work because we're just afraid of the pain that we're going to feel. And if you're just willing to go through your 90 seconds, cause every big emotional wave just takes 90 seconds to clear. It feels, when I'm going through one, it feels like I'm going to die. But if I breathe through it, I'm birthing the version of myself on the other side of feeling that pain. And most of our emotions are just energy in motion. They want somewhere to go. And if we can just be a steady place where we can fully trust how we feel in those moments, like the freedom on the other side of that is like, I'm not afraid of how I'm going to feel. Like, it's just extraordinary how like freeing it can be. And like, I think also too, like when you are someone who holds a lot of grief because you've experienced a lot of loss in life, right? Like with PJ, like to choose to listen to him when he wants you to celebrate his birthday instead of like cry yourself to sleep all day. You know what I mean? Like that they want to live through you in many ways. Like when our loved ones pass, I believe they're so close to us that they're closer than they were when they were Earthside. Cause like, you know, when my grandmother was Earthside, she was always in Palm Springs and I was usually somewhere else. Right. And so like, or Beverly Hills where she lived before that, right. Like living her life and like focused on her career for a lot of it. But now like as soon as I want to connect to her, she's right here. You know what I mean? And she's experienced the world through me. And I feel so much more intimate, you know? And of course I miss the earth experience of not getting to eat her cooking, but like I get to cook with her tools and like I get to feel close to her and make her recipes. So like, yeah. Tell me a little bit more about like how you connect with your ancestors now.
Well, I feel like it's almost a constant connection, but it started with me setting up an altar to them, putting up their photos and acknowledging their birthdays and just like thanking them for stepping through. Now, I will say that I went to a medium in 2019 after the getaway experience. And it was my Aunt LaDonna who invited my mom and I to come and get a family reading done at this medium named Joy. She's a really delightful woman. She lives in this little house out in the country, and she's a medium. And she had us sit at her kitchen table, and she started going into it and told my mom that her ancestor guide is her mother, and she's with her dad's there, her sister's there. And then she turned to me and said, I'm feeling someone different for you. I'm feeling your grandfather on your dad's side step in for you. Your grandfather said that there was a point in your childhood where you were cut off from them. And he's upset by that. And he didn't get a chance to get to know you and to nurture the relationship like he wanted to. So since he's passed, he's with you and he wants you to open up to him. So that way he can help guide you into this next step. It's so fascinating. I just listened to this recording. My mom recorded she recorded the whole meeting with the medium. And so just the other night I was listening to his message to me, and just thinking about like how far it's come since then. So he wanted to help guide me on like these next steps. So I totally feel like Grandpa Jane, like my Grandpa George Jane, definitely led me to Camp Chesterfield, right? But I didn't really know like what the medium meant when she said that he wanted me to like open up to him. And I really had to like ponder that, you know, I'm like, what does that even mean? I didn't know any mediums. I hadn't worked with any mediums, so I didn't quite understand what that meant. But all it meant was like for me to accept that I'm getting these messages. I didn't know who they were coming from. And I would always dismiss my grandpa because I didn't have a strong relationship with him when he was alive. And he wanted me to stop doing that. He wanted me to say, okay, it's grandpa. Like grandpa's talking to me. He's giving me this guidance. And by doing that, it opened up so much. He would. So when I had this spiritual awakening and I gotten this message for money at the time, I was doing Grubhub. And so I would be out doing Grubhub deliveries and he would be pointing out churches to me. Like, look how nice that church looks. Oh, you see the stained glass in that church window. And he's just like, look at all these churches. And I'm like, I'm not going to church. Grandpa, I'm sorry. Like, I know you want me to go to church. You were a Freemason. You were religious. I'm not going to church though. Like we can just stop that right now. Just cut it out. I'm not doing this. Right. And so now I'm like at church every Sunday, you know, years later, now I'm at church every Sunday. And not only that, I'm inviting people every week to join me. It's just funny how things change over time, but yeah, once I was able to like move in with Janae in 2020 and like have a room again of my own, I started setting up, an altar to my ancestors and my friends and my loved ones in spirit. And I feel like since I've done that, like more and more have like shown up and they come through a lot in mediumship messages from Camp Chesterfield. And then like, I feel certain connections to them as well. I'm starting to trust more. So now I can kind of discern who is giving me the messages just because there's like so many around. So I have to kind of like discern, is that grandpa? Is that my brother? Is it Mary, the Christmas elf? Is it Sunflower, my joy guide? Is it Howling Wolf, my protector? You know? And so it's like, I'm getting there though. The more I stay quiet and listen to myself, because that's the thing, like, it's hard to like sit with yourself. And my guides have been telling me recently, like, that's been my issue. I haven't been comfortable being myself, so it was hard to just like sit with myself and process the feelings and all the things I needed to process. So they have been guiding me to just like rest again, like just lay, even if that means like just laying in the bed for an hour. Maybe you're not tired and sleepy, but like just rest, like rest your body, rest your mind, you know, breathe. And the more I do that, the more I'm able to easily discern who's giving me the message and for why. And so I'm excited to just see how that continues to like unfold as I'm taking mediumship development classes as well. The mediumship development classes actually meet twice a month. So that's not even a thing that you have to wait on. You pick your teacher at Camp Chesterfield and you get their contact information and find out when they're doing mediumship classes, and then you just join them, and they kind of throw you right into the pond, like immediately. My first mediumship class, I had to give messages. So she's like, I don't care. You know, my mediumship development teacher is Reverend Meg Wolsifer. And she told us, there were two of us that was our first time giving messages. And she's like, I don't care if purple people eater is what comes to your mind, just say it. And that's all we ask of you. Just say what you get, you know? And it was scary. And like, you know, I'm like, what am I going to say? What am I going to do? But like, it's like ripping the Band-Aid off. And the more that we do it, the easier it's going to be to develop that muscle, just like anything else, right?
Absolutely. Start before you're ready. Butterflies mean go. Just because you're afraid doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. It's just your body not knowing what it feels like to do this thing. And so you can expand your comfort zone. And eventually your warm-up becomes, wait, no, your max becomes your warm-up, right? Like that's
right
in any arena. But like also in mediumship development. Amanda, I'm going to spring this on you, and you're a Gemini. I think you can handle spontaneity. Would you be open to doing a reading for me just to show people what that's like?
I'm going to decline just because I need a little meditation time beforehand.
Fair enough. Listen, I love a no, because if there's no no, there's no yes.
Yes.
So just to give people an idea of like how these, how the medium readings work at Camp Chesterfield, because I feel like everybody, I have so many psychic friends, everybody does it a little differently. And I love the way Chesterfield does it, because the medium will come in, they'll introduce themselves and their joy guide, which, explain what a joy guide is. It took us a long time to figure out, as church attendees, what's a joy guide?
Your joy guide is just that. They guide you to joyful moments, and then they're also a gatekeeper. So they're like the gatekeeper in between the spirit world and you, right? They keep all of the unwanted spirits out. People have to have permission, and you say certain things to your joy guide to like get the thing going and open up the gates. For a lot of the mediums at Camp Chesterfield, that symbol is a song. Like they do a song to raise the vibration, and that kind of lets the joy guide know that they're ready to start doing messages.
I didn't know that that's what the song was for. I thought the song was just fun. So I love the joy guide, because I've heard about gatekeepers before, but hadn't heard it called a joy guide until Camp Chesterfield. And then usually people will introduce their doctor of philosophy. Will you explain what the doctor of philosophy is?
Yes, for some it's a doctor of philosophy, and for others it's just a doctor teacher guide.
Okay.
And so that guide guides you to things that you need to learn about.
I love it. I haven't always said, once I realized that my curiosity, like in 2018, helped me make a fast and life-changing decision in 2019, like having done hours of hyperfixation on something, and then poof, I was ready to make a big decision right away. I was like, I think my curiosity is my intuition. And then I started noticing and realizing like, oh, if I trust and follow my curiosity today, something in the future is easier and more clear because I did this, right? And so it's just like, and also curiosity is joy. That's my word for 2024, is like curiosity. I'm just like really going to lean into curious. And like also being curious makes you better at loving your people, which is one of the most important things to me, is just loving my people. And so being curious about people and like connecting to people as an experience versus like, what are they judging me for and what can I get from them, instead of like a transaction. It's just a curiosity and an experience, like with compassion, I think is just like the way to be and experience and know that everybody you love is just constantly evolving and changing. And that's a good thing. And it's just important to be there and to love. Tell us about the protector guides. I think that's also a thing too, from that I've learned from Camp Chesterfield.
Yes, I have a protector guide that stands behind me. His name is Howling Wolf. When I first learned about him, all I learned was that he's a very tall Native American who wears deerskin clothing. So I was curious about what his name was, because with sunflower, it was easy. I was given the name. Reverend Cindy Hoffman told me that she was my joy guide. She welcomed me to spirituality and then sent me on my way with my joy guide, right? And so with the protector guide, I wasn't sure about what his name was. So I asked him, what's your name, you know? And I got back Wolf, but then I felt like something else was supposed to go in front of his name. So I'm like, tell me what else goes in front of your name. And I kept seeing like howling wolves, like images of wolves howling at the moon. And so I asked for 3 more confirmations and I got them. So my protector guide is Howling Wolf. He protects me always. And then I got a mediumship message at service 1 week. And he said that he, whenever I feel like I don't know which way to go, just ask him for help and he will shoot the arrow in the direction that I should go. And so I've asked him to shoot the arrow in the direction that I'm supposed to go. And every time it shoots to Camp Chesterfield.
From your house.
Yeah, from my house. It's like right over there, not too far. You know the way.
Oh, I love that. I too was introduced to my joy guide by Reverend Cindy at a service. It's funny because sometimes they'll just call on you like Price is Right. And sometimes they'll start giving clues about something and then someone has to claim it. Sometimes like the clues will apply to multiple people and there's always a message from spirit that's like, you know, I take a lot of notes at church because like these messages are gold, like really important life lessons, you know? And like, so she was calling for someone who had used the term honey bear as like a term of endearment. And she was seeing this cartoon come through. And I had used that with my first fiance. I called him Honey Bear. And it's so fascinating because like that guy, you know what I mean? Like, like I don't care for him anymore, but like, she was like, there was something in the way you said that. And like that connection, like this is a joy guide. This is coming through to, and it was before I even understood that even as much as we understand about joy guides now, like we were still like, I kept asking you, I was like, what is a joy guide while you're in Camp Chesterfield? You've got to find out what this is. So anyway, it was just cool. And it's fun to like have guides to work with. And for any of you out there who want to work with your guides more, like just meditate, ask them, tell me your name. Like, you know, like tell me what you're here to do. Like I started when I was working on my Akashic Records practice, because I have a daily practice opening the Akashic Records, which if you listen to my episodes with Leah Garza, we talk about what that is. But as I was doing my Akashic Records practice, I started seeing things in a new way. Like it's literally new sight. Like it's like my eyes could relax in a way they never could before, and I can see things in the clouds now so clearly. It's like we can always see shapes in the clouds, but I see messages in the clouds. And so I've gotten guides coming through in the clouds, like showing me who they are, and it's really fun. And it's just a good reminder to take time. Like I get a lot of my messages while I'm walking. I too am a meditator who just lays down. Like I've always loved a slow morning, and I didn't realize, oh, I could just have some discipline and boundaries in my life to create slow mornings for myself and curate that time. So if I need to be doing something at 9 a.m., I'm going to be awake at 7, but like laying in my bed for a while because I'm meditating and I'm connecting to spirit and I'm doing my affirmations and just really being intentional and just slowly and surely over time, being more and more intentional about who and how I am in the world.
Yes, absolutely.
Amanda, do we have any final thoughts? Anything you wanted to say, my lovely Gemini friend?
Yeah, I just wanted to add, when I was introduced to my joy guide, immediately after Cindy gave me the message about the joy guide, she released me, and then she came in with another message, and she was describing this person, and I knew immediately that she was talking about my brother PJ. And I'm like, Cindy, you know, their rule is that like you can only get one message per service. And I said, Cindy, I really think that's my brother. And she said, you know what? I think it is too. And I'm just going to go ahead and give you this message really quick because he's serious about it. He said, there's no gatekeeper. There's no middleman with you and him. He will give you direct messages, and there's no one that's going to stand in his way. I was just like, wow. He really hated a middleman, you know, when he would buy weed, in life. Like he hated a middleman, and I can just, I see him not liking that in the afterlife also. He's like, no, that's my sister. I will speak to her whenever I want to.
I love that. I love you so much, and I love getting to know your dead people, your guides, and all of it. And just also shout out to Grandma Mary. This is her time of year. She loved Christmas the most. And like you and me, Grandma Mary goes hard for Christmas all year long. She comes through a lot. I can't tell.
Yes. She does. I feel like she was like she's a part of my soul tribe before I even was incarnated. I feel like we made an agreement that she would be there to help me through my childhood. And I mean, she passed. She made her transition 3 months after I graduated from high school. So, yeah. So I don't know. I just feel her with me a lot, and she's the inspiration for a lot of the things I do. And just like the way that I am, the way that I care about people and like and show concern and love, a lot of that came from her. So shout out to Mary for sure.
Yeah, and she was your step grandma, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I had my stepmom died not right after I graduated from high school, when I was 19, and definitely was like this angelic presence in my childhood that like I had never known unconditional love, and I didn't know how to receive unconditional love when I had it, right? And it's so funny, I had to make a lot of peace like in my 20s, like after I like stuffed the grieving feelings away for many years, and I couldn't talk about her without crying, which is a good indication that you have some things to process, just anybody out there. But as I've like, and I just reconciled, like, okay, well, I was a teenager and I was traumatized. Like I didn't have the capacity to receive her love at that time, but I can receive her love now and receive her inspiration and now. And like, I do think we have soul tribe that comes through to just get us to adulthood. I had another friend whose grandma raised him because his parents were drug addicted and like died 3 months after high school, just done.
Wow.
But you know, it's amazing how people can be there for you and like will be there for you. And if you let them, and even if you weren't at the time gracious about it, like they can still be there for you and with you in the afterlife too.
Yeah, absolutely. I just feel like she was a person who was like, it's okay, you can sign this soul contract. It's going to be a lot of fucked up shit happening in your childhood, but she'll be there with you. It'll be fine. She'll protect you as much as she could.
She could, exactly. And you know, that's all anyone's ever doing. It's just as much as they can. And
yes,
it's just beautiful. Thank you, Amanda, for sharing your story on my podcast. This is only the first of many. If you're interested in Camp Chesterfield, I'll put a link to that in the show notes. If you're interested in the Glowing Goddess Sisterhood, I'll put a link to that in the show notes. If you identify as a goddess and you like to heal with cannabis, we might be the crew for you. And our origin story is also in our new zine. We're doing a quarterly zine. It's beautiful. So if you're interested, get on our mailing list. I think that's how you do it. Anyway.
Yeah, just subscribe on the website and we'll send you the zine quarterly when it's released. The first issue was so beautiful. I'm so proud of our zine team. Shout out to Kendra, Street Rat Draws. Shout out to Tori. Talk with Tori. I mean, they put in a lot of work and it looks really good. So if you're able to go check it out, you can go to our website and check it out. You don't have to subscribe to anything.
Yeah. But we prefer if you subscribe so we can keep up with you and tell you what we're conjuring, because we're always having a good time.
Yes.
And we're aiming for just, you know, just to let the people know, we're aiming for a gathering in Indiana in early May. Right?
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
It's true.
If not Indiana, it will be somewhere. We will have a gathering in person in May somewhere. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I love you, Amanda. Thanks for being my sister. Thanks for being my friend.
I love you, Bevan. Thank you for being such a special part of my life. And thank you for having me on your podcast. It's truly an honor to be here with you.
Yay. Bye, everybody.